Coming up on Tech News Today, Google I.O. involves falling from great heights, Zeppelins, and two new Nexuses. We like one, not so sure about the other. Also, T-Mobile's head just quit. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, June 27th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT6. And they now offer free domain registration with annual plan subscriptions. And by Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're a media maker who needs stock video clips, photos, illustrations, music tracks, or sound effects, check out Pond5 for instant downloads at the best prices anywhere. Check out Pond5 at pond5.com, and for 25% off this month, use code TWIT25. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Chad Johnson. And
Jason Howell is actually live at Google I.O. Hey, Jason.
Hey, sorry. It was freezing there for a second. I had absolutely no idea that I was part of the intro, but I guess I would be because I normally am.
That's all right.
Being on the other side.
We've got Shannon Morse here from Hack 5 today. We're going to talk to her in a bit, but let's start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Google I.O. kicked off with an avalanche of announcements, and then some people jumped out of a Zeppelin. That's all true. The official announcement of Android 4.1 Jelly Bean came with the good news that some devices are going to get it soon. Google, as expected, unveiled the Nexus 7 tablet starting at $199. They also announced their first Android at home product, the Nexus Q, kind of a Sonos type device that also streams Google Play and YouTube videos. That runs $299. Google Plus gets the addition of an events feature for planning and documenting parties. And now over to IaaS to explain why people jumped out of the Zeppelin.
Thanks, Tom. Google's serious about its Project Glass because the company sent five base jumpers out of a Zeppelin while streaming on a Google Hangout. That is true. Why? Because today at Google I.O., the company announced that U.S.-based attendees of the conference can obtain the Explorer edition of Project Glass for $1,500, and it'll ship next year. Sergey Brin told the audience that, quote, this is not a consumer device, and it's, quote, bleeding edge. Yay, glass, blood. I'm going to need a Google Band-Aid.
Pretty sure that's not what he meant.
Oh.
T-Mobile USA announced that CEO Philip Hum has resigned and COO Jim Alling will take over the CEO duties in the interim. The company said Hum left to pursue a career outside of Deutsche Telekom, that's T-Mobile's parent company, and rejoin his family in Germany. T-Mobile Deutsche Telekom CEO Rene Obermann said in a statement that the company needs, quote, somebody who can convert initiatives into market successes. Ooh, burn when taken out of context like that.
According to Strategy Analytics, a research firm, the iPhone has generated cumulative revenues of $150 billion since its debut way back in June 2007. Now, that number is on hardware sales only. And that's of various iPhone models because Apple has shipped 250 million iPhones. Strategy Analytics says the iPhone is in for some challenges in the next 5 years, citing subsidy costs higher than Android devices.
U.S. District Judge Lucy Koh in San Jose, California, ruled today that Samsung may no longer sell the Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.1 in the United States. Samsung got banned after a federal appeals court instructed the judge to reconsider Apple's request to ban the tablet. Koh ruled the order should become effective once Apple posts a $2.6 million bond to protect against damages suffered by Samsung if the injunction is later found to have been wrong. The order does not apply to the Samsung Galaxy Tab 2.
Microsoft is about to get more nimble because its wallet's about to get a lot lighter. The EU has upheld an antitrust ruling against Microsoft, and the company must pay over $1 billion U.S. dollars. The tiny good news for Microsoft is the court lowered the fine from 899 million euros to 860 million euros.
An app shown at TED Global in Edinburgh will allow people caught in riots or natural disasters to find safe areas to head to. Users can point their phones in a certain direction, and then the app will pull information from Flickr, Instagram, Foursquare, Facebook, and Twitter, process it using natural language analysis, and suggest areas that are dangerous, they'll show up in red, and areas that are safe, which will show up in green. The app has been tested in riots and protests in the UK and Italy. A publicly available version is due to be released soon.
Airbnb is expanding from setting up rentals of people's homes and into what it calls wish lists. Users will be able to save places to a list and share it with friends on Facebook if you want to. Airbnb has a whole bunch of example wish lists so you can get some ideas.
The next time someone asks you for one example of an ISP violating net neutrality, point them towards this story. Swedish operator Telia will charge customers for the use of VoIP on its network. According to Telegeography, Telia has tested the plan in Spain on its Yoigo subsidiary. Subscribers pay €6 per month for 100 megabytes of VoIP traffic, which supports between 5 and 10 hours of either Google Talk or Skype calling.
Google didn't do much talking about Google TV today, but SiriusXM did. Sirius told Reuters that it will make all of its programming available via Google TV. Listeners will be able to pause shows. You'll need a SiriusXM subscription to listen to any of the content when the app launches in the summer.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace.com. It is the fast, it is the easy, and it is one of the best ways to create a high-quality website or blog. Now, sure, you can host your own blog if you, and the one thing Squarespace can't do is give you access to like Pico editors over Telnet. But if that's not important to you, if you just want a really good-looking website and you want it as easy as possible to put together with the option to go tweak some HTML or CSS code, but really just an easy, good-looking website that's reliable with 24-hour support 7 days a week, you got to check Squarespace out. And Squarespace has never had a better time to sign up. Squarespace has several great incentives happening during June, making it the best time to sign up for a new account. Annual plans get the best deal. Free domain plus the lowest price plus an additional 10% off. Here are the details. Squarespace offering free domain registration to all annual plan customers, completely integrated with the sign-up process. Hassle-free. While you're signing up, you choose your domain name. As long as it's available, you get it. That's at least a $15 value. And it's yours. Even if you stop using Squarespace in the future, you still get the domain name. Squarespace recently reduced its prices now, offering plans as low as $8 a month, and Squarespace is still giving you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. That means 10% off the first month if you go with a monthly plan, or 10% off the first year on annual plans. I use it for swordandlaser.com. I use it for unitedmooncolonies.squarespace.com. You can go try it out absolutely free. Don't even have to use a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com, put in a name, any name, start any kind of site. You'll see how good you can make a website look in virtually no time. And then if you do decide to keep that site and pay for the service, be sure to use that code TNT6 to get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts. Don't forget about the free domain registration, too. At squarespace.com, use the offer code TNT6, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, Shannon Morse, Hack 5, welcome to the show. Thanks for sticking around to discuss with us. Good to have you here. Sarah Lane, of course, on vacation for the next couple of weeks.
So. Yeah, kind of jealous of her.
I know, but we're happy you're here.
Well, thanks. You guys.
We got lots of Google I.O. stuff to talk about. Jason Howell on the scene at
That's
the Moscone
right.
Convention Center. And I know we got to let you go real quick, but okay. Just give us your impressions before we do of the most important, the most exciting things you saw there today.
Well, I mean, obviously, first of all, Jelly Bean was kind of a big anticipated thing. And I think it's kind of an incremental change for the most part as far as updates to Android are concerned. But it seems to be kind of hoping to improve some of the promises that I think Ice Cream Sandwich brought with it. Namely, you know, improving the UI, the graphical smoothness. They have, I'm sure you're going to get into the details here, but Project Butter, which kind of excited me in the sense that it aims to kind of improve that graphical approach to Android and really speed things up and just kind of make the whole kind of experience a little bit more fluid. And that's definitely a big complaint that I think a lot of people have with Android from time to time, is that it promises so much, but then when you're actually playing with it, it's jittery, it's maybe slow on animations, it can't quite keep up to the speed that you want to use it. So I think that's going to be really cool. Everybody seems to be talking about Google Now, which is essentially their, I don't want to say Siri competitor necessarily, but it kind of works in the same way as Siri, where it tracks the things that you do with your phone, be it how you travel to work, your commute, public transit that you might use, appointments that you might have in your calendar, basically takes all those pieces of data and wraps it up into a usable form for you so that hopefully it's thinking one step ahead of you instead of you having to open up your phone and find out these pieces of information before it just offers it up to you. Those are definitely pretty cool features of Jelly Bean, I would say.
Jason, what do you think of the hardware that came out in I.O. today? We saw the Nexus 7 tablets, what we expected, and then the Q, a media streamer. What were your impressions?
Well, the Nexus 7, first of all, absolutely. It's pretty much identical to what we were talking about a few days ago. The display looks great. I played around with it very briefly at a booth. It's too bad that we didn't actually get this hardware. I won't get it until tomorrow because it's not even available to attendees for another 40 minutes or so. But I was able to play with the Nexus 7. It's a nice, compact, small, pretty light device. There is no SD card on here, so that's going to disappoint and probably keep some people away from it. And the bezel in person, the bezel is actually pretty large when you start to use it. But overall, you really can't beat the $200 price tag on that. Now, the Nexus Q is kind of interesting. This is a social media streaming player that they introduced, and they're targeting a price at around $300, which personally I just feel is almost twice as much as it probably should be considering what it does. But the thing is, the hardware design of this thing is really slick. It's just a nice solid device with a rotating top, and it has this tap to touch sensitivity that allows you to do a lot of kind of interactive things with it. You know, it streams media from your phone directly to your stereo, your sound system, or to your TV. It does a lot of cool things, but the one thing that I kind of walked away from at the end of that is I almost feel like the lines are blurring a little bit when you talk about Google TV and the Nexus Q, almost in the same way that the lines blurred with Android and Chrome OS, where it's kind of like, okay, I get it, but why didn't you just integrate Google TV and the Q into the same type of package? Maybe they will. They probably will eventually, but there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
Now, you're inside the belly of the beast there at the developers conference. Are people inside the Kool-Aid factory also saying the same things about the Q, or are people saying, no, I love it, it's awesome?
Well, it was pretty interesting during the keynote where they were talking about the Q, and everyone was, you know, kind of inspired by the fact that this is kind of what we saw a little bit of last year with the Project Tungsten demonstration where they tapped the CD on it. This is totally the evolution of that, and this is the next step of that. But it was a very marked, noticeable thing when they announced the price point. You could hear a lot of people go, you know, it's just, I mean, $300 is a lot to spend for something like that when you've got, on the other hand, you've got Apple TV for $100. A lot of these players are $100 and you're asking people to spend three times as much. Now, what we're starting to find out is, you know, New York Times is reporting that the Q is manufactured actually in San Jose in the U.S., all parts manufactured in the U.S. So that could be a reason for that cost. But it was strange that they didn't make that a part of the presentation. That could have at least justified the cost a little bit and made it smooth over just a little bit more when people finally heard that price point.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's available for pre-order right now. It's shipping in July. Do you think anything else is going to change? I mean, this idea that it doesn't have Google TV seems really bizarre. There's a whole lot of like caveats with this device.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're going to find out anything more about this particular device throughout the rest of the session. What I do think was kind of interesting is we didn't hear anything about Google TV yet. And there's been a lot of buzz about Google kind of taking a second look at Google TV and maybe injecting some more lifeblood into it and going in a different direction. I do think that we're probably going to hear a little bit more about that tomorrow. That's my guess. Even though it is Android at its core and today seemed to be the Android day, it'd be very surprising to me if we hear absolutely nothing about Google TV going forward. Now, whether that integrates into the Nexus Q down the line, I don't really know if that's the case. But at $300, I get the feeling this is kind of a non-starter for the most part. It's cool. I'll be able to bring it one to TNT probably the next time that I'm in studio because they are giving everybody that was here one to test out and play with and everything. But $300 is just a lot for that device.
All right, Jason, we know you have to go. Thanks for sticking around and chatting with us, though. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be on the other side. Have a good rest of your show.
All right. Jason, of course, will be at Google I.O. tomorrow as well, but he'll be back on the show on Friday.
Yeah, we had to speed through a lot of those details to get Jason in, but let's talk about some of the specs we had. You know, Android 4.1 is out, and that is 4.1. It's not 5. We have Jelly Bean that's coming out to devices like the Galaxy Nexus, the Motorola Zoom for some reason, the Nexus S in mid-July, and of course the Nexus 7, which was introduced today. That I pre-ordered one. It's $199 and $249, like we said. No expansion slots on that, which, as Jason said, probably will scare people. That's one of the reasons I want the 16-gigabyte one. By the way, no free shipping on that. It's 14 extra bucks for two-day shipping.
What do you expect? You got to pay shipping on everything. Why would you suddenly get free shipping from Google? Why did that bother you?
It was
so
just
much?
Seeing this extra, like, I'm paying $249, then 15 extra bucks for the Nexus 7. And obviously, that's not coming till mid-July. and it will have jelly beans. I'm excited about the way that looks. What did you guys think of the of Project Butter with this super smooth? Now, when Google showed this off, they showed it with like 300 frames per second to show how the animations were so much smoother, because apparently Ice Cream Sandwich did not have as many frames per second. But jelly bean with Project Butter, that's actually what they called it. It's going to make everything smoother. Do you like this, as Shannon?
I'm definitely a iPad person. I bought my iPad recently, and I don't plan on changing to a different tablet anytime sooner. But this whole Project Butter thing, I'm pretty into that, because FPS is extremely important to me, especially when I'm video gaming, and that I do that a ton on tablets.
Yeah, and the games looked impressive on the Nexus 7. I think the Nexus 7 is targeting the perfect point somewhere above the Kindle Fire. You're going to compare this thing to Kindle Fire because of its size, but then you're going to realize that it is more capable than the Kindle Fire because of its hardware, and it's going to look a little bit more like an iPad. So if Apple does come out with a 7-inch, that's going to look like a direct competitor to this, and the price is dead set on Amazon. So I'm very interested to see how Amazon reacts to this with the next version of a Kindle-type tablet. As far as Android goes, I was really impressed by the fact that you can now do voice typing offline, which is a very handy thing. You can take actions directly from notifications now, which that's been available in other operating systems before, but it's a very smooth implementation of it. I love that. And Google Now, which is a very web OS-looking card-based metaphor situation that tries to predict what you need based on your search recommendations. Now, Leo was saying when we covered it this morning that it sounded really creepy the way they presented it, and I don't disagree with them. But if you kind of can wrap your head around it and not be creeped out, the idea that it would know, hey, you know what, you're a Cardinals fan. We could tell by your searches, so we're going to surface the Cardinals scores for you. Or we can tell by geolocation that you're near the Ferry Building. Here's the Ferry schedule. Without you having to ask, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds very smart. It sounds a lot smarter than, I don't know, Siri.
It's like it actually is a personal digital assistant. And the other thing, the way Google's presenting the data, they were talking about Knowledge Graph. It's very similar to that card. You're seeing a little index card of information. And if you want to still see search results, you could flick it out of the way and see your search results. A lot of the gestures looked a little WebOS-y if you were going to switch apps or get rid of pictures.
It makes sense because they hired a bunch of the WebOS guys.
And it looks pretty. I mean, that's one of the big things that would happen. First version of Android, very utilitarian. 4.1, very slick. Now they're worried about the way it looks, the way it operates. It's, I think, a really smart move. Also, with Android 4.1, there's smart app updates. So if you're going to get a new application or like a new update, it's an incremental update. You don't have to download the app all over again.
Saving your bandwidth.
Makes it a lot faster, I would imagine, for over-the-air downloads as well. And that seems like that's a nice little feature to have.
Now that they're adding all of these kind of little intuitive ideas into Jelly Bean, I think it's really going to help their, I guess you would say, their market percentage as far as consumers are concerned.
And then there was the Nexus Q, the sphere-like media streamer that is made in the United States. Now,
I had an AM radio that looked just like that.
A lot of devices look like that. Actually, there was a Wired article. Wired brought up the fact that this was introduced last year. It was called Project Tungsten, and they actually had like 15 of these on a shelf. It looks like a bunch of dodgeballs. It looks like a gym class. This device apparently cannot work on its own. It must be powered by an Android device. It does not work with iOS.
No iOS?
It does not work with your PC. It does not work with...
doesn't work on its own.
Windows Phone or its own.
You've got to have an Android device in the house to make it work.
You will tell on your device that I want to listen to something from Google Music. It will pull from the cloud. As far as I can tell, it's not pulling from your device.
But you can't tell it to do anything without having
an Android device.
So you're kind of stuck.
I guess if you really want to figure out how to do it on a PC, that would actually be...
Android
on a VM and then go do it. But
what's its face? The little BlueStacks.
BlueStacks. Maybe you could do that. But there's a lot of... I'm sure people are going to work around this. I was surprised that it didn't go with a DLNA-style standard. Mm-hmm. This device at $300 available now, and it's available for pre-order now, at the devices section of Play, because now that's filled out. We have the tablet, we have the phone, and now we have the Q. It has no local storage. It can work with HDMI. It has its own little speaker. Shannon, do you think this is worth $300?
No, not at all. I mean, I can't use it with my iPhone. I can't use it with my iPad. Maybe if I buy a Nexus 7, but after I buy that and then I buy the Nexus Q, that's another $300. It's going to get rather expensive. So I'm probably going to have to skip the Nexus Q, unfortunately.
But it's made in the U.S. with factory conditions that are so much greater than when we see the expose.
That's why it's $299.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if they give me a coupon, I'll buy it, but I don't see that happening.
Oh, that reminds me. The Nexus 7, another quick detail. You get a $25 credit to the Google Play Store. And that's what the Nexus Q works with.
I want a credit with the Nexus Q.
That would be nice too. I didn't go to the checkout because I would not pay for it either. But also, it only works with play.
Does this thing bounce like a dodgeball? Because then if it did, probably it'd just, be kind of cool.
Maybe just once. It probably bounces. Only works with three software services: music, movies, and YouTube. So if you have any other content,
forget it.
You're not going to be using it. So it's
not an Apple TV. It's not a Roku. It's a Sonos competitor.
It's not a Google
TV.
Which
actually explains the price point, but nobody's looking at it and saying, oh, well, the Sonos costs about the same amount. They're looking at it and saying, this thing does fewer things than my Apple TV or Roku, and it costs a lot more. Why would I get it? They're not doing the right way of presenting it somehow.
Look, that could be just, again, it's a developers conference. Maybe there are going to be applications written for this that could make it different. Yeah, but the big thing that Google pushed is the first thing they talked about with the Nexus Q was social music playing. So Tom is over at my house. I have this Nexus Q for some reason. We both have Android devices. He can send a song and cue it up, and then I can send a song, a cue. We have a nice cue of music. Get it? We can all share socially.
I can do the same thing with some iOS devices, some speakers.
And I don't really want people to be able to preempt my ability. That's not a feature I'm into. Let's talk about jumping out of Zeppelins before we finish up off our Google I.O. So Vic Gundotra was right in the middle of telling us about Google Plus's events feature, which is their new invitation feature on Google Plus. A nice little feature. When Sergey Brin ran on the stage and totally Kanye'd him. Just said, look, I've got a time-sensitive thing. I have to interrupt you. I've got five people in a Zeppelin and they want to jump out. And that is exactly what went on to happen. Five people wearing Google glasses in a Zeppelin over downtown San Francisco on a Google Hangout jumped out. You could watch all five perspectives from the glasses as they plummeted to Earth, and then they landed. And man, it was impressive. They all landed on a little yellow error on the top of the Moscone Convention Center, handed over the Google glasses to people on bicycles, who then took the bicycles and jumped from one convention center building to another, handed over the bag with the glasses to a rappeller who rappelled down the side of the Moscone Convention Center, went in on the third floor, he almost missed the floor, and then ran up the aisle and handed the glasses to Sergey Brin.
What?
I'm not kidding. That is exactly what happened. It was crazy.
If you're listening to the audio version of this, we're playing the video that Google showed as a live demo. This is what they did. The real thing, I mean, that's all snazzy and everything, but the fact is Project Glass is going to be available for purchase for developers.
Yeah, well, you're skipping ahead a little bit, because afterwards, after this huge thing and everybody is impressed, they're like, now that's a keynote presentation, jumping out of not a plane, a freaking Zeppelin. I mean, this is like one of those crazy things, like, what if we did this? And they actually did it. Two unfortunate people were given the task of going up and doing a normal presentation about Project Glass.
Well, you don't need a presentation.
And everybody is like, I'm sorry. No, I don't care who you are. You cannot follow that up with a straight ahead presentation. It just fell absolutely flat. But then Sergey Brin came back up and announced that attendees of Google I.O. who have a shipping address in the U.S. can purchase beta hardware of Project Glass for $1,500.
That's all?
They can pre-order it today, and then it'll ship after the first of the year. He made it very clear. This is beta hardware for developers to play around with. It's not a consumer product. That's not going to be the final price when this thing comes to market. But my wife was there, so I made her sign up for one.
That's totally like chump change for me. I mean, I gotta get some.
I'm gonna have to do a telethon now.
Right? Well, Bookery in the chat was mentioning it's like five Nexus Qs or one pair of Google glasses. Uh-huh. Like, I'd go with the Project Glass.
Glasses
too. And you know, the thing is, in the end, they didn't reveal anything new about Project Glass. In fact, Sergey Brin did a separate press conference afterwards and gave us actual information. The glasses will need to be tethered to a phone when you're out and about, so you'll have to have an Android phone in your pocket to make it work. They will work on your home network at home, so presumably on Wi-Fi. They'll have a lower price point, he wanted to reemphasize, but they will be premium priced. So I'm guessing somewhere between $500 and $1,000 for these things.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe $700 or so.
There'll be a cloud API. So if you're looking for an API for something, you got an API for the glasses. He said you'll be able to flash the firmware. They'll be extensible. This is a hacker's platform. You'll be able to mess around with it.
The guy breaks my glasses.
Shannon's excited.
I'm so excited about this.
You think if you break it, you just get like a big error code the whole time?
Get like, a blue screen of death.
Like it's all rose colored because I'm looking right through this one.
And then, of course, after all of that, poor Vic Gundotra had to come out and finish his Google Plus announcement. Basically, he just played a video and said, Google Events rolling out right now. You should see it. I have it on my Google Plus now. Allows you to invite friends, track responses, plug those responses into Google Calendar. And then their big thing was, unlike other event management, we have a place where you can upload photos during party mode when the event is actually happening and see them in real time. Cool. And then collects them all for afterwards so everybody can look at
it. And you can look at it on your tablet because Google has new tablet apps for Google Plus.
No, good point. All right, let's take we got some other news to talk about. I want to take a quick break, though, and thank our other sponsor, Pond5, the world's stock media marketplace. If you're out there thinking, you know what, I want to get those glasses and start shooting videos with them, start making films, or if you're already a movie creator, or if you want to make your own shows on the web, or you're just a podcaster, anybody who makes media can take advantage of Pond5. They have photos, vector illustrations, music tracks, sound effects, motion graphic templates, all kinds of creative assets. Chad, if I were to want to make a movie about roller coasters, would I be able to find something that involved, look at that, roller coasters and a Venetian bridge right there.
It's like an
My Venetian roller coaster movie is saved. I have the B-roll I need to make it. Just come up with, seriously, this is a fun thing to do. Come up with the most ridiculous premise for a movie you can think of. Go to Pond5. You will find the pieces you need to make that movie. You'll find the audio, you'll find the sound effects, you'll find the illustrations, you'll find the video. It's an amazing place. And if you're somebody who shoots this kind of video, you can sell it and get industry-leading royalty rates on there as well. So Pond5 has a special offer for our audience members, 25% off your purchase this month when you use the coupon code TWIT25. That's Pond5, P-O-N-D, the number 5.com. Use that code TWIT25, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. So we mentioned in the news views, T-Mobile's CEO resigned. Philipp Humm, if you want to know a little bit more about him, was the managing director of Deutsche Telekom's German wireless arm from 2005 to 2008. He resigned in 2008 because 17 million subscriber records had been stolen in 2006. And so he sort of took the fall for it. It was never proven that there was any wrongdoing on his part. Deutsche Telekom even said, look, you know, the guy just took the fall. It's not his responsibility. And then he took over T-Mobile USA in November 2010. He was charged with bringing the company to profitability without help from the parent company. It didn't work out so well in his first year, though. So March 2011, he hit on the solution. We'll sell T-Mobile USA to AT&T. And we all know that didn't work out. Not because of Humm, but because the regulatory agencies in the U.S. said, no, you're not going to do that. So apparently he has had enough, and ZDNet confirms a GeekWire report that Humm is leaving T-Mobile to go to a Deutsche Telekom rival in Germany. The only actual statement we read earlier is that he wants to go spend time with his family in Germany, but sounds like he's like, I'm getting a job at somewhere else.
He's like,
see ya. I'm out of here, yeah.
I mean, there were rumors that Deutsche Telekom was going to sell off T-Mobile or possibly merge it with, I think it was, I can't remember the other carriers, but they were going to merge it with that. It could be a condition of that. If that could be a reason why you would switch out your CEO, get like a golden parachute package, get on out of here. Although
it may have been the intention to sell T-Mobile the whole time. Mm-hmm. And they said, look, Philip, we need you to manage this process. Mm-hmm. And then when it didn't work out, you're right. They say goodbye.
I'm just reading over his bio. I forgot about the fact that he resigned and then he took over the American arm. So like, you stink over here. We're going to ship you over.
Stink. He kind of fell on his sword.
Okay, we fell on his sword and then they rewarded him by making him the head of a subsidiary. And
it was 2 years later.
They shipped him off.
Well, and maybe they reward him because they're like, look, we know this wasn't your fault, but you're going to have to take the fall. We'll set you up in 2 years.
Well,
by putting you in an even worse situation.
Yeah, well, either way, I mean, we got to see what T-Mobile is going to do anyway. So what the CEO is going to do to make this company either, if it's not sold, what is T-Mobile going to do right now? Because they're still the number four carrier. They really need a lot of help.
They have got a cash infusion because of the fee that they got from AT&T. They got a spectrum infusion from AT&T. And it looks like they're going to get some spectrum out of Verizon. That has yet to be approved. But T-Mobile's talking about rolling out LTE Advanced in 2014. So they're on the up and up. They're on the up. They're looking better than they did before the sale to AT&T. It'll be interesting to see who they bring in, who they get to lead this company, because actually I think T-Mobile, it's not an easy one. It's certainly not a lock, but it's got the potential to get back in the competition.
I don't recognize this company. They changed the pink dress lady to some leather-clad lady.
Carly's wearing leather, CEO, riding motorcycles.
CEO's somewhere off with his family. I don't understand what's going on.
All right, let's talk about Facebook stupidity. That's always good for...
Yes, this is probably going to be on your local news tonight. There's a website right now called We Know What You're Doing. It's similar to PleaseRobMe.com. And with the site, it was launched by an 18-year-old, Callum Haywood. And what he's doing is he's taking public data from Facebook's Graph API and Foursquare check-ins, and he's generating four streams on this website. The four streams include who wants to get fired, who's hungover, who's taking drugs, and who's got a new phone number. So if you're wondering why he's doing this, he puts into the About page, he just explained the lesson to be learned here is just make sure you're aware that your stuff is public. Go into your Facebook privacy settings and change what you want to change. So I get the who wants to be fired one is actually, I think, one of the longest ones that go on there. It goes on for a bit because people publicly complain about their bosses on Facebook.
Yeah, you know, I have a couple of people in mind already that I should probably send this website to just to be like, hey, look, this is why you should make everything private on Facebook, because guess what? Now everybody knows your phone number and everybody knows that you're hungover and that you hate your boss.
And the other thing is the usernames are not like blurred out. They're not anonymous. This is actual user data. You're seeing like Jimmy.
They do cut off the last name. So that's good. And I have noticed that all of the cell phone or all of the phone numbers in here, they start with 07. Mm-hmm. So they all look to be from, I guess, England or the UK.
And they block out those phone numbers.
Yeah, they do block them out with little X's.
And I think that's hilarious. Because even this site is saying, look, we know this is public information, but there's a difference between public and security through obscurity.
Yep.
And they're recognizing by that the fact that, wow, if we go that far and make the phone numbers public, we're going to get a lot of rage. Even though these phone numbers are technically public, they're not stealing them. They're out there for everyone to see, but they're putting them in front of other eyes. And there is a difference there.
Oh, I was wrong. It was not who wants to get fired the longest. It's who's hungover
who's hungover.
The longest stream. And the other thing is your profile picture is up there as well, because that's public.
Oh, that's right. And, you know, I absolutely love the fact that this is here, because this is a website that it had to be made. And not to mention that the fact that Callum Haywood, I believe, an 18-year-old guy created this. 18 years old, and he has the idea to make this, because I'm assuming all of his friends are making things public for the world to see.
It's the same impulse that led to Face Smash by an 18-year-old at Harvard.
Yes.
I mean, he might have been a little older than 18 at the time, but Mark Zuckerberg did a similar sort of thing. Like, let's scrape this information and do something funny with it. Callum's doing that. Callum's doing this with a little more of a public mind, though. He's saying, look, people should realize when they post this stuff, it's findable. And maybe it's not as findable as it is as I'm making it, but I'm doing the point of I'm doing people a favor, saying when you put it on the internet, it can be found.
Yeah, and the top of the page says, we know what you're doing. And the bottom says, and we think you should stop.
And yeah, he's out there giving interviews saying, here's how you go in and change your privacy settings. Everyone, please go do this. Make sure you know what is being published and what isn't. So,
yeah, I mean, it's something that people should be aware of, that when you're online, your information can be public unless you're doing something otherwise.
Now, what I would like to see on this We Know What You're Doing website, I'm looking at it right now, and I don't see any kind of link to giving you directions on how to privatize this information. I think that would be very useful if they
you should add that to
that
the site as well. I've seen him. I've seen quotes of him talking about
it. Section somewhere.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So it looks like it's a small link. It's a lot of text
right now.
Maybe
make it a little more prominent, but that's nitpicking. He's doing the right thing.
Yes.
Let's finish off with Operation Bear Love Good, Cancer Bad. This is Inman's The Oatmeal effort to satisfy Funny Junk's demand for $20,000. The quick version is he said, no, I'm not going to send you $20,000. They're mad because he was complaining that they stole his content, which frankly they did. And so he decided to raise $20,000 on Indiegogo, take a picture of the money, send it to them with a picture of their mom, sort of a generic their mom being seduced by a bear or trying to seduce a bear, called Operation Bear Love Good Cancer Bad. He said he would give half the money to the Wildlife Federation and the other half to the American Cancer Society. He finished it up today. Total funds raised $220,000, $224, 11 times the original goal. After Indiegogo takes its 4% commission, that leaves $211,223.04. So unless Funny Junk's lawyer, Carrion, who's taking Inman to court personally, by the way, unless his request for a restraining order goes through and stops the funds being transferred from Indiegogo, Inman should get the money in about a week. He intends to withdraw it, take a photo of the cash, and send it to Funny Junk as promised, and to Carrion, by the way. He'll then send checks, he'll put it back in, and send checks to both charities and post receipts as well, and solicit public confirmations from the charities that they received every penny that was promised. Because of the lawsuit, though, Inman had been planning to take the money that was over $20,000 and split it up to other charities. He says because Carrion is suing him for fraud, for operating a charity without a license, he doesn't want to complicate it by adding new charities now, so he's just going to stick to the original plan and divide it in half between the National Wildlife Federation and the American Cancer Society.
Yeah, originally he was going to just give it to two different charities, and then he was like, wow, this is a lot more donations than I was
expecting.
Yeah,
he thought he'd help out more people.
So he was like, yeah, I'll just divide it up again between four. And then Carrion's lawsuit claims that he was holding an illicit fundraiser and not donating the money to where he said he would. And I was like, really? Really? It's so important that he just gives it to these two charities instead of four? What's your problem here?
It's, I mean, this is actually a pretty smart way to do this, because if he's getting hit with that charge, he's like, look, all right, look, now you have nothing to stand on. I'm giving it to these two places. Yep. That's what I said I would do. You said I was giving it to four. It's two. Leave me alone. Yeah. This should be done already. I mean, it's a great story that the internet, you know, came together, gave this guy enough money to do this kind of defense, because this is, frankly, somewhat, the whole story is a bit ridiculous.
Yes. Good job, oatmeal.
And here's a test. Which is more ridiculous? The real life issue of someone suing you because they stole your content and then getting mad because you raise money for charities, or our story in the Randomizer?
Randomizer.
Which is an art project of 80 Teddy Ruxpins reading emotional snippets off of social networks. This is a large wall-based installation called TED, not the TED Talks, but an array of 80 Teddy Ruxpin dolls that speak emotional content gathered from the web via synthetic speech with animated mouths. You've got to turn the audio up and listen to this if you watch this.
Maybe they did what they did to escape that empty feeling.
I just want to feel like you love me.
That actually sounds
like
Teddy
Ruxpin.
This
is going to give me nightmares. I can't watch.
I feel all the nutrients doing happy things and making me energetic again.
I guess at the end of the day, it all boils down to how you feel about your life on the inside, finding those things that make you happy.
I'm in a great place in my life.
Oh, I'm thankful for that.
Energy and optimism.
Some stuff.
Good job,
wall.
Teddy.
So as each Teddy Ruxpin talks, a spotlight is shined on them, or him. It's, you know, you don't, this is a great art project, and I think I would take bad news better if it was given by Teddy Ruxpin, you know, if the internet wasn't feeling that good that day, and Teddy Bear's telling me it's bad.
You know, and it's weird, when you listen to these, you think, oh, this is just weird poetry, but it's things being posted on the internet, not meant to be read by a stuffed animal.
Maybe they can cross this with We Know What You're Doing, and we can have a bunch of drunk Teddy Ruxpins.
That's an awesome idea, actually.
I am so hungover. I hate my boss.
I'm going
this
to throw up.
This thing gives me nightmares. I'm just imagining now going into my mom's attic and having my old Teddy Ruxpin just come to life and start telling me about the feelings of the internet.
All right. Let's try to purge that image from your mind with the calendar. Tomorrow, June 28th, Google I.O. continues. We're expecting to hear about Chrome, Chrome OS, Google TV. The breaking news coverage tomorrow starts at live.twit.tv at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's when the second keynote happens. And I think it's supposed to be a little shorter than today's keynote. Also, tomorrow, the world awaits RIM's earnings report, or at least RIM's stockholders await RIM's earnings report. Verizon's Share Everything plans go into effect tomorrow as well. And then coming up July 15th, Sprint's first LTE launches in 5 cities, coming a little sooner than I thought. And Sprint's Samsung Galaxy S3 is confirmed for July 1st release, although I don't think it has LTE in it.
Well, if it does, you can't really
Sprint.
Use it. No, yeah. Actually, you don't have LTE.
You could use it in 5 cities if it did. And that's a look at the calendar. Let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We have a call that says, Tom, your DRM position is hypocritical. Well, let's hear.
Hey, Tom. So I just listened to Frame Rate and 1,000 other shows where you talk about how great it would be that DRM is abolished.
yet all you seem to do is focus on how much DRM should be abolished for everything except Steam and Blizzard. Everyone talks about how great Blizzard is, even though you can't play Diablo 3, a game that would be perfectly suitable to single-player offline play. Offline, you need to be on the internet. Steam, you need to be on the internet to authenticate. And if they don't remember your authentication, you can't play your games. This is horrible DRM. You guys talk about how great they are. What's up with that?
I will tell you what's up with that. You're right. No, he's totally right. I love Diablo 3. And the only reason I don't complain about it more is that I have a ubiquitous internet connection. If I was trying to play Diablo 3 offline, I would be ranting and raving against Blizzard.
It
is about DRM. That's the thing. If it wasn't about DRM, if Blizzard was saying, you know what, we just want you to play this online. We know it's not a multiplayer game necessarily, but we want you to be able to see the chat room and see what other people are doing when you're playing and take advantage of that. And so all we're requiring is an internet connection for it to work. I would say, well, why? Why do you need to do that? Mm-hmm. Just have it not, those things don't work. But it is about DRM. And that's what's silly is Blizzard, you can make the money off of the subscriptions. They should be giving World of Warcraft away. That shouldn't.
They used to.
Yeah. And they practically do. It's free to play up to like level 20 now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Diablo 3 should not require an internet connection to play. I agree with you.
There are plenty of games that should not require it. Anything that's just first player and you're the only player doing that specific video game should not require the internet at all.
And some people are saying it's due to the Real Money Auction House. You should just not be allowed to take advantage of the Real Money Auction House if you're not online. I mean,
bam, problem fixed.
I don't know. I know that Blizzard has some reasonable justifications for it. But in the end, those reasonable justifications are also in addition to the fact that they want to have the digital rights management. Mm-hmm. And that's a fair point. Steam, I think, has a similar situation, although that DRM is foisted upon them by the game companies. And they are a game company, so they're maybe foisting it on themselves. But they wouldn't be able to sell the games without having some sort of DRM system in place.
But a world without DRM everywhere would be nice.
Yeah. No, it would make things easier. I guess what I would say is, you're right. Steam and Diablo 3 could both exist perfectly fine without DRM, and there wouldn't be an issue. Mm-hmm. I only don't complain about them because I don't run into those issues. This is one case where their DRM seems to be working well enough that I haven't personally been affected by it, unlike video, where the DRM just seems to break all the time.
Mm-hmm. Practically, very different.
Yeah. All right. But no, appreciate the honesty of the call. Let's move on to some emails. Matthew wrote in and said that he disagreed with us giving Orbitz a break over showing Apple users the higher priced hotels higher up in the results. He says the point, as I see it, is that filtering the data in this way is a needless personalization which attempts to manipulate the user into spending more money under the guise of being helpful. If it is indeed true that Mac users spend 30% more on hotels, then they are already doing that when presented with the same information as everyone else. Good point, Matt.
Totally different viewpoint. Thanks for writing in. Dan wrote in about the Ofcom draft legislation and sending copyright infringement reports. He mentioned that it will cost £20 to appeal for whoever is being accused of this. By the way, that's true, and the ISPs also have to contribute 75% of the cost of running the plan. So both the user and the ISPs are getting screwed.
So yes.
Or they're paying up.
Everybody's paying.
Paying in to the system.
To the system.
That's a draft legislation.
Without them having to actually sell music. That's much better. Well, thank you all for watching or listening and submitting stories in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, the place to go to let us know what stories you'd like to hear us talk about. Operation Bear Love Good right there at the top. It's one of the reasons we discuss. In fact, it is the reason I put it in the discussion because folks wanted it. Go in there and vote for stories. Even if you don't have time to submit stories, vote them up or down. Let us know what stuff you'd like to hear. And Shannon, thanks so much for joining us today. It's a fun day to talk about stories, wasn't it?
Dude, totally. The Google I.O. is very interesting.
Yeah, good stuff.
Had a good time.
What's going on at Hack5?
Let's see. We've been extremely busy with the Hack Shop, hakshop.com. Just came out with the Mark IV, and we have plenty of bundles to choose from. And we've been talking about proxy chains every day on Hack5. It's excellent.
You know, whenever you or Darren talk about what's going on at Hack5, there's a part of our audience that just goes, what?
And that's what they should watch.
And then there's an equal or greater part that goes, yes!
Well, you can also watch Hack Tip, H-A-K-Tip. It's on YouTube, and you can also find that on our website. I'm doing this whole series about Linux Terminal 101, starting from the very get-go and going into it.
So if you're like, I would like to be one of the ones that goes yes, but I'm still on the blank, try it out.
You can learn along with me.
That's awesome. HAK5.org. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail. They can be positive voicemails or critical, 260-TNT-SHOW. And, of course, you can find us at live.twit.tv starting next Monday at 10 a.m. We're moving our time. And we have John Strickland on the show tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Project Butter.
Project Butter.